Okay, if anyone did not yet receive a source sheet, the final source sheets are at the back. And if you could pop them at the back, maybe people who come in later can pick them up. Okay, as I suspected last week, I think we need to turn our minds a little bit to Pesach now. The last installment of our Das Torah shiur will be coming after Pesach. And I don't propose to give any analysis of the election results. It's for others more qualified than me to do so. But Pesach will come, whoever is in government, Be'ezrat Hashem, and we need to give a few thoughts to some ideas. Now, we've been doing this, thank God, for a few years now. So if you want to get the past shiurim that we did over the last 4 years, we looked at Kitniot in depth, we looked at Gebrochts, we looked at the Kazayit, we looked at Oat, Matzot, and Celiac issues. We've looked at all sorts of issues over the last few years. I want to look today one we've never talked about in this shiur, and then next week, let me give you a little bit of advance notice. Next week I want to look at a specific issue. It touches on Kitniot, but it's not what we looked at a few years ago. A few years ago we looked at Kitniot in the sense of where does the minhag come from, what are the parameters of it. Next week I want to talk a little bit about mixed marriages, because we live in a time where I think, Baruch Hashem, more and more Ashkenazim and Sephardim are marrying each other. And this creates some tensions every now and then on Pesach. We have, Kenan and I, two children. Our daughter married a Litvisha Ashkenazi, so we have no problems. We have no Kitniot and yes Gebrochts. So we're all square on that one. Our son recently got married to a Sephardi girl. So her family, their main center of their meal on Shulchan Oreich on Seder night is risotto. They're Italians. And you can't go without your risotto if you're a good Italian Sephardi on Pesach. And therefore, this has put this issue into some focus in my mind. And I'd like to talk next week a little bit about that and about some of the more fringe, if you like. I'm not talking about tzitzis, but some of the more fringe psakim that have been given out there about Kitniot. Throw a little bit of a teaser in. I went to a shir last week in Alon Shvut where Rav Zev Weitman, who is the Rav Amachshir of Tznuva, said very clearly that many of the products which are labeled out there as Le'ochlei Kitniot Bilvad, only for people who eat Kitniot, are completely permitted to all Ashkenazim who do not eat Kitniot. And what's he saying? Where's he coming from? How does that work? I'd like to touch on that next week as well. So please don't try to guess what I'm going to say. We'll see, come up if you want to take a break next week from your Pesach cleaning. We'll talk about that then. Two final announcements before the shiur. If you don't mind turning your phones off, please. And if someone could shut the door, that would be very helpful too. Okay. I come from a family of Bechorot. I am a Bechor. My mother is a Bechora. My father has one older brother, but he was much older than him, so he's not a Bechor. But we have a lot of Bechorim in the family. Our eldest son is a Bechor. And we always had discussions as to what to do. He had opinion about it and everything. We always have discussions as to what to do in Tanis Bechoras. How does that work? And I'd like to speak a little bit about that today. What's there to say about Tanis Bechoras? So a lot is the truth, and more than I thought there would be. This year, of course, the Daf Yomi cycle has it perfectly timed because they're coming to the end of Chulin this Thursday and starting Bechoras on Friday. So nothing could have been more perfectly managed for there to be a Siyam for everybody who does Daf Yomi, and even those who don't can just tag along. We'll talk about the Siyam issue in a minute. But as I said, I am a Bechor and have this question quite a lot. And the two main questions about Tanis Bechoras are as follows. Number one, why on earth is there a fast at all? Where does it come from? Why do people do this? It seems very counterintuitive that there will be such a thing in Nisan on Erev Chag that there would be a fast instituted. So where on earth does it come from? Almost without any clear sources in the Gemaras that we usually go to. And once we know, yes, there is a fast, the second question is, why does nobody fast? Meaning once we've decided that there is such a thing, nobody does it. Everyone finds a way of getting out of Tanis Bechoras. There's this answer, there's this patent, and this. So once we work out why there is a fast, then we'll work out why nobody does it, and hopefully then we'll have a good understanding of how Tanis Bechoras works. Let's have a little look at the whole concept of the Bechor. First of all, maybe on a grammatical note, is it Bechorot or is it Bechorim? Okay? And this bothered me a little bit, and I'm not such a big grammarian, and I consulted those who know better than I. And the answer is, there are many words, of course, in Hebrew with irregular plurals. Feminine words that end with an im in plural, nashim is an obvious one. Masculine words that end with an ot, avot is an obvious one. But there are some words where you apparently have a choice. And in Lashon HaMikra, in Biblical Hebrew, it takes a regular plural, bechor, bechorim. But in Lashon Chazal, it takes an irregular plural. So Chazal turns certain words which are masculine into irregular plural endings. For example, Bechor, Bechorim turns to Bechorot in Chazal. Rachel, Rachelim turns to Rachelot. Pardisim turns to Pardisot. Moadim, Moadot, Kvarim, Kvarot. There are many of these. And that's why you end up with these slightly ambiguous plurals. So in case you're interested in that angle, that's the Bechorim, Bechorot angle, and that's all I know about it, and therefore that's all you're going to get about that. But I have given you a reference at the bottom of the page to the Academia Ha'ivrit, etc. If you're interested, you can go online and research this till the cows come home. Fine. Let's have a look how we're at the Psukim in the Torah about the Bechor. Let's do this quite quickly because I want to get into the main meat of the thing. Tanis Bechoros is, of course, not mentioned anywhere in the Bible, in the Tanakh, and it's not really mentioned in the Gemara either. However, Makat Bechorot is very strongly stressed. In fact, it is mentioned more often than any of the other of the 10 plagues. So let's have a look at some of these issues, and you'll see it'll give some context to the Tanis as well, number one. By the way, Tanis itself is a Chazal word. The word Tanis doesn't appear in Tanakh. The word used in Tanakh is Tzom. So I suppose if you want to be consistent and use Chazali expressions, it should be Ta'anit Bechorot, not Ta'an, maybe Tzom HaBechorim, if there was such a thing, which there isn't. Right, let's have a look at number one. The Amarta El Paro. God says to Moshe, right at the beginning of Shemot, you must go to Paro and say, Koi Amar Hashem, this is what Hashem says, Bani Bechori Yisrael. The Jewish people are my firstborn. Okay. V'omar elecha shlach et bani, send out my son, v'yavdeini, and so he can serve me. V'tzame'en l'shalcho, Paro will refuse to send him out. V'hine anochi horeg et bincha b'chorecha. I will destroy your firstborn son, God says to Paro, because you won't release my firstborn son. Now, it's very interesting that the whole metaphor of the firstborn is fascinating. I once heard a very interesting shir by Rav David Foreman on this. What is the purpose of the firstborn of the Bechor? So there's always a generation gap between parents and children. You can't avoid it. The children will always turn around and say, you don't know what we feel. You don't understand our situation. And it's true. We're in a different generation from our children. However, the siblings can understand each other. Therefore, the job of the Bechor is to be, on the one hand, one of the siblings, and turn around to the other siblings and say, listen, don't tell me I don't understand you. I'm one of you. I'm in your generation, and at the same time be the representative, if you like, of the parents. So the Bechor is the bridge between the unrelatable parent and the siblings. And of course, in the sense of the Jewish people and the rest of the world, the metaphor is very clear, which is that all people of the world are the children of God, and they don't get God because the generation gap is infinite between an infinite being and finite people. However, the Jewish people are there to be, if you like, one of the siblings and yet representatives of the parents. It's a very beautiful idea that the Jewish people are the Bechor in this sense, and it's stressed in a number of ways. So too in number two, we find in number two, in Shemot, V'yomei Moshe, Koy Amar Hashem, K'chatzot Alayla, at around midnight, Ani Yotze B'toich Mitzrayim, I'm coming into Mitzrayim, Umeit Kol Bechor Be'eretz Mitzrayim, B'Bechor Paro HaYoshiv HaKisov, from the firstborn of the king himself, Ad Bechor Hashivcha Asher Acha Reichaim, till the maid, the firstborn of the maid who sits behind the grindstone, V'chol Bechor Beheima. And of course, the firstborn of the animals is also a very important point as well, and that finds its way into the halacha too. So too, the destruction of the firstborn is linked with the destruction of the gods of the Egyptians. Number three, V'avarti Be'eretz Mitzrayim B'Laila Hazeh, V'hiketi Kol Bechor Be'eretz Mitzrayim Mi'adam V'ad Beheima, the same thing. And again, if it could be that the Bechor can be turned into an Avodah Zorah. The Bechor is the link, if you like, between the children and the parent, so too Avodah Zorah becomes an inappropriate link in the chain between people and worship of God. So there's a connection between the Bechor and the destruction of the gods as well. The actual slaying of the firstborn, which is an important pasuk for us in number four, we need to look at in a bit more detail. Vayhi b'chatzi halayla, and we're getting into all the Torah of k'chatzi and b'chatzi, I'm sure you've heard it before. Vahashem ikar kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim. God actually slayed the firstborn in Mitzrayim. Mi b'chor paro yosheva kiso, ad b'chor hashvi asher b'beit habor. Slightly different metaphor there. That the shvi, or example, the firstborn even of the prisoners in the Egyptian jails. And I'm sure there's a reference somewhere to Yosef there as well, which you can bring out on Seder night. B'chol b'chor b'heima, and so too the animals. V'yakam paro laila. Paro got up in the middle of the night. Hu v'chol avadav, v'chol Mitzrayim, v'tehit tza'aka gedola b'Mitzrayim, and there was a great screaming all around Egypt. And here's an important phrase. Ki ein bayit asher ein sham meit. Because there was no home in which there was not someone who died. Someone died in every home. How could that be? Is there a b'chor in every home? There can't be a b'chor in every single home. So if you look here in Rashi, Rashi explains in number 5 how that works. Quite a well-known Rashi. Yesham b'chor, number 5, if there was a b'chor in the home, mate, so the b'chor died. Ein sham b'chor, what if there was no b'chor? Gadol shebabayit karui b'chor. The head of each household is called a b'chor, and he brings a pasuk. Shene'emar, as it says about David HaMelech in Tehillim, af ani b'chor et nehu, I'm going to make him the b'chor. Now, David HaMelech was anything but the b'chor. David HaMelech was the very youngest of the children, and yet anyone who's going to be in charge is called a b'chor. And that's why it could be that every home had someone who died. Now, does that mean that on Tanis B'choris, the head of every household should fast because they're a b'chor as well? No one's ever heard of that. We'll see why. Davar Acher, alternative says, Rashi, Mitzriyos Mezanois Tachas Balehem, the Egyptian women were unfaithful and they committed adultery with other people other than their husbands. The Yoldois Mirvakim, okay, they had children from other single men. Pnuyim. The Hayolahem Bechorot Harbe, and therefore there was more than one firstborn child in each family because the woman was having affairs with different men, and therefore there were lots of firstborns. Now, from there, by the way, what do we see that the firstborn is? The firstborn of the mother or the firstborn of the father? The father. It sounds like it should be the firstborn of the father. However, life is not so straightforward. If you go over the page, we'll see that is that how we define a Bechor? On the one hand, maybe yes. Have a look here in Tehillim, a pasuk less broad on this in number 6. We're doing this quite quickly because this is introduction. Vayach kol b'chor b'mitzrayim, says Tehillim that God smote the firstborn of Mitzrayim. Reshit onim ba'ohalecham. The reshit onim. What's reshit oni? That is a phrase used in Tanakh for the firstborn of the father. It's used in Dvarim when he talks about the inheritance. It's used when Yaakov gives the brocha, or if it is a brocha to Reuven. Reshit oni means the firstborn of the father. On the other hand, the way we define firstborn in halacha, look in number 7, kadesh li kol b'chor, peter kol rechem. Peter rechem. Peter rechem has got nothing to do with the father. Peter rechem is solely from the mother. B'bnei Yisrael, ba'adam, b'heima lihu, and it goes on to describe what we know to be the din of the b'chor, that the boys, if you're the peter rechem and you're a human being, so you are redeemed, as long as your mother is not a bas kohen or a bas levi. I actually didn't have a pidyon haben. They were on the verge of giving me a pidyon haben, and somebody realized that my mother's a bas levi, so they had the party anyway, and they didn't really go, whatever, no, if you're going to eat, you can eat. But my son did have a pidyon haben, but everyone knows it's a 30 days peter rechem, the firstborn from the mother. With an animal, so too, it's always peter rechem. If you own a kosher animal, and you have a firstborn male, you don't know who the father is very often of an animal. It doesn't matter who the father is, it matters who the mother is. If it's a peter rechem, then the firstborn kosher animal is given to the Kohen. If the animal is a tamim, if it's suitable for a sacrifice, it's given as a korban b'chor, with all the excitement that goes with that. If it's not, if it has a mum, then it's given to the Kohen as a gift, and the Kohen eats it as not a korban. But either way, it goes with peter rechem. So what's it going to be? The children of the male or the children of the female, or maybe both? If you look here briefly, number 8, you'll see that the whole Bechor status was ultimately lost. Number 8, Va'ani hine lakachti et ha-Levim. I have chosen the Levim, says Hashem, mitoch b'nei Israel, from the children of Israel, tachat kol b'chor peterechem, in place of every person that was a b'chor peterechem, they've now been switched for a Levi, v'hayu li ha-Levim. So, is there any ongoing relevance to the b'chor in a sense when they've been switched for the Levim? And of course, everybody knows that if you happen to be the firstborn child of a Levi or a Kohen, you do not have a Pidyon HaBen. So does a firstborn child of a Levi or a Kohen do Tanis B'choros? Yes or no? Are they a firstborn or are they not? Well, they're firstborn, but they're not technically a firstborn because they're not a B'chor because they're a Levi already and a Kohen. But they are a firstborn for other purposes. What we're going to have to work out is how we define this halachic parameter of Tanis B'choros. Are we going to take a very technical definition? You know, firstborn of the father, firstborn of the mother, or are we going to take a very midrashic definition, which is there was no home in which there wasn't a b'chor? It's the idea of b'chor, and how are we going to navigate through the based? Given that the whole thing has almost no sources anyway in the Gemara, where are we going to find the makorot in order to decide who should and who shouldn't fast? And we'll see soon that they take it quite seriously. If you indeed are a b'chor, then fasting on Erev Pesach seems to be quite a serious thing. So let's have a look and see if we can find some origins for Tanis B'choros and work out what we're going to do about it and how we're going to deal with our Siyum, etc., if we're going to have one. Have a look at number 11. Rav Sheshet. Okay, Rav Sheshet is in the Talmud Bavli here. And Rav Sheshet, it says, Hava Yasiv B'tanisa kol ma'ale yuma de Pischa, he would sit and fast all Erev Pesach. Oh, this sounds like a perfect opportunity for the Gemara to discuss Tanis B'choros. Says the Gemara, why? Neima mishum pischahu. Maybe it was because of, it was the zman of the Korban Pesach. Even though Rav Sheshet lived many centuries after they were no longer bringing the Korban Pesach. However, the Gemara says, Dilma mimshach va'asilim nui mila avid pischahu. Maybe there was a concern when they brought the Korban Pesach that people, if they sat and ate on Erev Pesach, then they'd get carried away and they'd give them a meal, they'd forget to bring the Korban Pesach. Now, one second. When's the Zman of the Korban Pesach? When does that begin? Lunchtime. So what's the problem eating in the morning? Why was he fasting all the morning of Erev Pesach? V'savala, maybe he held, ki hada amar Rav Yishaya, amar Rav Eloza, like the position of Rav Eloza. Machshir haya ben b'seiru v'pesach, sheshachtu shachris ba'ar ba'asa lishmoy, that if you did bring a Korban Pesach in the morning of the 14th, and you did it l'shem Pesach, u'mitzafris man pischahu, and maybe the morning was already, meaning we're going a long way to try and work out why Rav Sheshet was fasting. Maybe he held like the opinion that hundreds of years earlier held that Korban Pesach could be brought in the morning, and if you brought it in the morning, you might get carried away if you sat and ate. In the end, we throw the whole thing out. No. That's not why Rav Sheshet fasted on Erev Pesach. Amri, so the Gemara says, no. Lai, Shani Rav Sheshet the Istanis Hava. Rav Sheshet was an Istanis. To eat time, but safri midi, if he ate anything in the morning, he couldn't get any benefit from food in the evening. He was very sensitive. If he ate in the morning, he couldn't eat in the evening, and therefore he didn't eat all day so that he could do the mitzvahs properly. But it's got nothing to do with the Korban Pesach, and apparently it's got nothing to do with Tanis B'choros. Now, I don't know whether Rav Sheshet was a B'chor or not. Maybe the reason the Gemara never suggests is because Rav Sheshet had six older brothers. I have no idea. Or sisters. But it would have been a perfect time to bring up Tanis B'choros right here and right there in the Gemara. And in fact, Tosfos does exactly that. Look over on page 3, number 12. Tosfos says, Rav Sheshet have a Yasi B'tanisa. Rav Sheshet would sit and fast on Erev Pesach. And first of all, Tosfos says, Lav Dafka. It doesn't mean he didn't eat anything. El Hashoyma Atzmoy Milechel. He just watched what he ate. Now that's interesting. Does that mean that a Tanis could be that you actually do eat on a Tanis? You just don't overeat on a Tanis. I'm sure lots of people would like that idea of a Tanis. It's not that I don't eat, it's just that I don't, you know, I just watch what I eat. Sounds like that's what this Tanis was. And then he says, Patos Vasei Vaha Bechoros, Nagu, the minag of the Bechoros, already in his time in Ashkenaz in the 12th century, Leitanot, Erev Pesach, they used to fast on Erev Pesach. Masechet Sofrim, as we see, Masechet Sofrim, She'ein Mit'an in Nisan, that we don't fast in Nisan, El Abachar is Be'erev Pesach. Except one exception, the Bachar is in Erev Pesach. Now, very interestingly, Tosfos does bring in the minhag of Tanis Bechoris. Obviously, by the time of Tosfos, this was a minhag that existed. And the source, he says, is not our Gemara, but Maseches Sofrim. What's Maseches Sofrim? It's one of the so-called minor Masechtot. Not minor because they're small, because some of them actually are rather big. Avos de Rebbe Nosson is really quite big. But they're minor because they were never really canonized, and they may indeed be slightly later than the rest of the Gemara. There's a debate I brought you in the footnote as to exactly what is the status of Maseches Sofrim, but it doesn't seem to have quite the same status as the rest of the Gemara, but that's what mentions Tanis Bechoris. Have a look, please, in number 13. Says Maseches Sofrim, and you'll see some interesting new things. Is it warm in here? Very warm in here? Would someone mind asking them to go turn on the air conditioning, please? And then we can really feel that we're in summer mode. And then you'll see who starts putting the coats on first. Okay, can't keep everyone happy the whole time. It's not so warm in here. Maybe on these people over here are warm. Okay, fine, I'm getting mixed messages. Okay, fine. You could open a window. That's a radical idea, to open a window. Okay, let's have a look at number 13. Look at Maseches Sofrim. It's not so often learned, Maseches Sofrim, so let's use this opportunity to learn it together. Minag Raboisenu. There was a minag, says Maseches Sofrim, Sheba Ma'arav, in the west, in Eretz Yisrael, Lehitanot Shloishes Yom, you made Soy Mordechai Esther. They used to fast the 3-day fast of Mordechai and Esther. Now that's interesting. That's got nothing to do with Tanis Esther, because the 3-day fast of Mordechai and Esther, before she went to see Achashverosh, was in which month? It was in Nisan. It was in Nisan. It was over Chag. I say there. He says here, Prudos la'achar Purim. But they used to separate them after Purim, Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. Meaning there were people, says Maseches Sofrim, that wanted to fast that 3-day fast, but they did it in Monday, Thursday, Monday, and they pushed it back to, or brought it forward to Adar, so they wouldn't have to fast in Nisan. Why not? Even though the original fast of Mordechai and Esther was in Nisan. But lama ein mitan in oisim b'chodesh Nisan. Why not just do it in Nisan when the original fast was? Mipnesha be'echad b'Nisan hukama Mishkan. From the first of Nisan already the Mishkan was erected. V'shnaim asa nisim hikrivu korbanim l'shnaim asa yayim. And as we is well known, 12 nisim brought through, as of the days we're in right now, the nisim will bring the korbanot. Yom l'chol shevet v'shevet v'chol echad haya oisim b'yoma yom tzav. Every day is like a yom tzav. Lefikach, and here's the source of a well-known minhag, a well-liked minhag, ein omrim tachanunim kol yemei Nisan. Therefore, we don't say tachanun the whole month of Nisan. People will walk out of shul with a smile on their face, more than normal, some people anyway. You don't say tachanun. The ein mitanin ad sheyavo Nisan. We don't fast until Nisan is over. There are no sad days in Nisan. Nisan is a month of chag, a month of geula, etc. Which, of course, raises the whole question of Yom HaShoah and all the discussion that goes around that, which we're not getting into right now. Lefikach. One second. Yeah, lefikach. Therefore, ein oyim tachanun mekol yemei Nisan ve'ein mitanim ad sheyavo Nisan ela b'chore shemitanim be'erev Pesach. One exception to the rule: the b'chores fast on erev Pesach. The hatsnuim, and those people who were tsanua bishvil hamitzvahs kedei sheyichansu lePesach b'tayva. That's Rav Sheshes. Here he calls them tsnuim, which is very interesting. The word sniut and snua is used quite differently in Chazal from the way we use it today. And if you're interested, I brought you a reference in the footnotes to my shiurim on the structure of Hilchot sniut. Snuim in Chazal means people who are careful, people who are medactic, people who look forward to the consequences of their actions. There are many examples of that. So two people who know that if they eat on Erev Pesach, they won't be able to eat on the Chag. So they're called the Tznuim. That's the Istinis people of the world. And finally, the HaTalmidim, and the Talmidim, Mitz'anim Boi B'Sheni B'Chamishi B'Sheni, they do fast Monday, Thursday, Monday. B'Pnei Chilul Hashem, B'Pnei Kovad HaTorah Shenisrafa. What's going on? Who are these Talmidim? So I'm not going into it now. 15 and 16 discuss it. The Torah says maybe these Talmidim are what we call Bahab, that people fast. The Minag is Monday, Thursday, Monday, in case they were excesses over Chag. And the Beis Yossi says, no, that can't, because those people don't fast in Nisan. When do they fast? In Iyar. They wait till Iyar and they do Bahab in Iyar. So says the Bet Yosef, this must be talking about people who the whole year long, every Monday, Thursday, Monday of the entire year, they fast. For Tshuva, for Zeichel Churban, it's very interesting. Our whole attitude to fasting is so radically different. We do everything we can nowadays to try and explain how we can't fast and that it's not possible and we're all weak, etc. We'll see examples soon. Maybe it's because people didn't have that much to eat back in the day, and the difference between eating and fasting for many people was actually not so clear. But people used to fast a lot, and it used to be something which they felt able to do. And therefore, it could be these people were fasting through Nisan because they fasted the whole year long. Whichever way you look at it, it seems that it says here, the minhag of the Bechoros is Shemit Anim Be'erev Pesach. That is our one and only clear source for Tanis Bechoros in Maseches Sofrim. Okay, Maseches Sofrim, that's good. It's in the Gemara, if it's minor Masechta, etc. Rav Avadya Yosef brings a Chassidisha Nusach, or a Chassidisha Pshat, in how this works. Rav Avadya Yosef was very broad. He even quotes the Chassidim. Look in number 14 here, and he brings something which is mentioned, and I wanted to show you. I just brought it from Rav Avadya because he says it very clearly. Be'emet, says Rav Avadya, ki no'ot nifleti, I was awfully surprised, he said. Al mashe re'iti b'sefer pe'eri Yitzchak told us, Hagon HaKadosh, Rav, who is it? Yehuda Elimez, well, whoever it is, Zizizhov. Okay, probably pronouncing it wrong. He quotes this, Shikasa Bezelosh, and the following words. Be'erev Pesach lo yitana Rabbeinu. The Rebbe never fasted on Erev Pesach. V'gam b'noi, Hagon at Tzadik Rav Sender Lipper. He never fasted. Lo yitana afal pisha hayu b'chayrim. These Hasidic Rebbes apparently never fasted on Pesach, even though they were b'chayrim. V'gam Rabbi, Harav Hagon at Tzadik, okay? His Rav was also a Bechor. Even though it says in Maseches Sofrim to fast, they didn't used to fast. Why are none of these Hasidic Rebbes fasting even though they're firstborns? Because they says, Nizdakitos, because there's a mistake in Maseches Sofrim. It's not meant to say the Bechoris mit anim, the Bechoris fast, but mokam she Bechoris mit anim, tzarech loima, mit angim. They enjoy themselves on Erev Pesach. Baruch Hashem for the Hasidim, right? Tanis Bechoros has been turned in one change of girsa from a day of fasting to a day of feasting. There's only one word difference in English, one letter in English as well. From fasting to feasting, you just put an E in it, right? Says Rav Avadya, V'noirat niflesi she'ein ha'peh, she'eich ha'peh yicholol ha'berkein. How can anyone speak like that? He says, how can you say that? It makes no sense in the whole of the context of Maseches Sofrim, because the whole context there is that you're not allowed to fast in Nisan, except that the Bechoros fast in Nisan because the time is Bechoros. But it's brought down as a shita, I wouldn't say, but as an opinion. Maybe the whole thing is based on a spelling error, but I don't think that's the case, and Rav Avadya certainly doesn't think it either. But if you're Hasidisha minded, that gives it a different approach. Go over the page to page 4, please. There is one other potential source before we get into all the details of who, why, when, etc. The Gemara Yerushalmi. Now we saw the Bavli. Rav Sheshes in the Bavli fasted because he was an Istinus. Maseches Sofrim, we saw, refers specifically to Tanis Bechoros. But look at the Yerushalmi, number 17. Amar Rebbe Levi, Ha'oichel Matzah, quite a famous starting statement, Ha'oichel Matzah be'erev ha'Pesach, anyone who eats matzah on Erev Pesach, keba al arusasoi be'beis chama. It's like somebody who sleeps with, someone who sleeps with their arusa. Arusa is someone who's had kiddushin. It doesn't mean someone engaged in the modern sense of the world, but someone who's gone through kiddushin but hasn't gone through nisuin, in the father-in-law's house, the habal arusasa bebeis chamav loike, and such a person gets malchus. Even though you would have thought, what's the issa? They are man and wife. They have done kiddushin. They have said hari at mekudeshedli, but they haven't gone through sheva brachas, nisuin, yichud, etc. And therefore, there's something highly inappropriate. And so too, just as it's inappropriate to sleep with one's Mekudeshet, if you like, Arusa, in the father-in-law's house, so too it's inappropriate to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. Now, what exactly is the connection between those two things? There's a lot of Torah on it, okay? I believe Achad Ha'am was reputed to have said, I've done this and I've done that, and believe me, they're not the same thing. I don't know if that's true or if that's not true, okay? You can go and research that on your own, but the Gemara equates them, maybe because of the number of brachas that you make beforehand, one way or the other, it's inappropriate. And then he goes on to say, Tana Reb Yehuda ben Becerra, okay, Oimer, bein chametz, bein matzah osur. He says, what I'm sure many of you have said, there's nothing to eat on Erev Pesach. You can't eat matzah, you can't eat chometz, okay? Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, loy haya oichel lo chometz v'lo matzah. He wouldn't eat chometz and he wouldn't eat matzah. But would he eat other things? Maybe, we'll see soon. Begin to have a bechor, because he was a bechor. Beautiful. That sounds like a wonderful source. Patanis bechor is tan, Gemara Yerushalmi. This is a gezunta source. So Rav Yoina Abba have a bechor, v'have achil. Says my dad was a bechor and he used to eat. He used to eat. Interestingly, Amar Rav Tanchuma. So Rav Tanchuma turns around and says, Loi min hada. No. Rebbe didn't used to eat on Erev Pesach, not because he was a bechor. Ella rather min hada de Rebbe. The Rebbe istanis hava. He's another istanis, like Rav Sheshes. Kad achil b'yamama loy hava achil b'ramsha. If he ate during the day, he wouldn't be able to eat in the evening. Now, the way the Gemara concludes, do we or do we not have a source here for Tanis Bechoras? Well, we thought we did in the middle of the discussion because it said, Rebbe fasts on Erev Pesach because he was a Bechor. And the Gemara says, actually, no, he fasted because he was an Istanis. Nevertheless, the Rosh, if you look in number 18, the Rosh says, Va'anrina nami b'Yerushalmi, the Hach Pirkin, that we quote in the Yerushalmi, also in this Perikin of Pesachim, Rebbe loy achal chometz v'loy matzah, Rebbe didn't eat chometz, he didn't eat matzah, uboy lemeimer, and they want to say there, mishum de Rebbe b'chor haya, because Rebbe was a b'chor. Umasik, I agree, he says the conclusion is the Rebbe istanis hava, the Rebbe actually was an istanis, umikan, but nevertheless, from here, yesh sa'ad, there is at least a support, lemashanago b'choyres litanos b'erev Pesach. Even though the conclusion of the Gemara sounds that it's not because of that he was a b'chor, but, you know, you can be an istanis and a b'chor, you can be both, and the Rosh seems to say that this Gemara can be used as something of a source, the Korban Asanel in number 19, I'm not getting into it now, but he learns the lamdas as to why you could learn this Gemara as a support for Tanis b'choyres, even though it's only a havamina. It's only a suggestion that he was a Bechor, and the conclusion is that he was an Istanis. Nevertheless, you could learn this Gemara. So, soft, do we have a source for Tanis Bechoris? The answer is, it's in all the Rishonim. Now, not quite all the Rishonim. It's not mentioned in the Rambam anywhere, which is important. But it's in the Ashkenazi Rishonim. It's in the Baalei HaTosfos. It's in other places as well, in the Rav Yah, in the Agos Maimonides, in the Smag. But it's not anywhere clearly in the Gemara. It's certainly not in the Bavli. It may be in the Yerushalmi. It's in Maseches Sofrim. But it's very clear by the time we hit the Rishonim that people were doing this. People were fasting on Erev Pesach because they were Bechoires. And the question is, how are we going to define it? So let's ask a few questions for 10 minutes and work out what are the parameters of this. Look at number 20. Let's pick it up in the Tur. The Tur was like a half Sfari and half Ashkenazi. He was Ashkenazi, really, because he was born in Germany. His father was the Rosh. But they ran away to Spain. And his father became one of the main rabbonim in Barcelona in Spain, and therefore he lived in a very Sephardi milieu, if you like. Look at number 20. He says, "V'kas of Avi Ezri, my father, the Rosh, wrote, Shegam b'chor, even a firstborn, le'aim, from the mother, or maybe it's le'av, from the father. It's not clear what the correct gisa is. Yesh lo li'itanus kemoshe haita amaka gam b'hem. Even the firstborn of the fill in the gaps has to fast because they were included in Makas Bechoras. Now, what makes more sense here, that it should be even the firstborn of the mother or even the firstborn of the father? What's more of a chiddush, even the firstborn of the mother or even the firstborn of the father? So you would have thought even the firstborn of the father, because it's poshut that the firstborn of the mother has to fast. Why? Peterechem. Peterechem goes with the firstborn of the mother. So could be, and that indeed is the girsa of the Beis Yosef, that it's obvious that a peterechem, a firstborn of the mother, has to fast, but maybe even a firstborn of the father. However, the girsa in the Torah is even the firstborn of the mother, which makes it sound very much like definitely the firstborn of the father, and it sounds like the firstborn of both. He goes on to say, back in number 20, number at the end of the first line, Mihu gadol habayis. What about the head of the household? They were included in Makas Bechoras as well. Should everybody be fasting? No. Ein tzarich li'itanos. No, they don't need to fast. Afal pisha haita bahem amaka, even though they were included in Makas Bechoras, loy machmirim kula hai. We don't want to be that machmir on Erev Pesach. There is, of course, a downside in fasting, which is you feel like a wreck, meaning you're going to go into Seder night having not eaten and not drunk the whole day, and then you're going to hit four glasses of wine and a kazais of matzah that's like, you know, whatever the size is that you eat a kazais of matzah. That's not a recipe for success. One of my Rosh Yeshiva wants to say he always gets a knock on the door on Seder night, someone at his house. He says it's not Eliyahu Anovi. It's some wife from down the block whose husband has just eaten the most enormous kazais of matzah, and then 4 or 5 years, minutes later, he's thrown it all up again. Okay? And the question is, number one, is he yotze the mitzvah of achilas matzah, even though what went down came back again? And does he have to bench? He says every year he gets asked the shaila. So fasting on Erev Pesach is not going to help that. So we're not machmir so much. And then he brings the halacha of the istanis, which seems to be a halacha if there are people who cannot eat in the evening, if indeed they eat during the day, then they should fast on Erev Pesach, although I'm sure most people today don't fall into that category. We seem to be quite happy eating all the time. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach raised a very interesting question. And he wasn't the first to ask this question, but he said, look, the general consensus seems to be the reason that the firstborn are fasting is because of Makas Bechoras, but there are problems with that. Problem number one is, when did Makas Bechoras happen? Not on the Erev Pesach, but on the night of Pesach, on the 15th. They should fast on the 15th. How are you going to turn around and say, well, they can't fast, can they? Because they've got to eat maror and matzah, etc. But it's also, it's a funny day to have Tanis Bechoras. Why do so many women not fast, he says, when it's clear the women were included in Makas Bechoras? We'll get to women in a minute. Why doesn't every head of the household fast, he says? Why don't all the descendants of the firstborn fast as a zecher to the nes? You know, they are descended from people who were saved in the fast of the firstborn. And why make it a fast? Why not make it a yontzef? Well, if you're a Hasidic Rebbe, you do make it a yontzef. We saw that. But why not make it a yontzef? And he gives a very interesting answer, which he says deals with all of these questions, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he suggests that actually, why are the Bechorim fasting on Erev Pesach? Because the Bechorim lost the right to bring korbanos because of the Chet HaEgel. That's the real reason. And the day of the year when the most korbanos were brought, the most exciting day in the Beis HaMikdash was Erev Pesach. And everybody's there bringing their korbanos, and the Bechorim are looking and crying, this should be us. This should be us bringing the korbanos. And it's the Kohenim. Why? Because we messed it up. We messed it up at Makas Bechoras. Okay, there's a famous story, Rav Shlomo Schwab, when he saw the Chofetz Chaim when he was a young man. The Chofetz Chaim says, you know, when Mashiach comes, he said to him, I'm going to be running up to the Beis HaMikdash to be a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, and you're going to be standing outside watching. Why? Because my Alta Zaydi, when Moshe Rabbeinu cried, Mila Hashem Elai, he ran to help and yours didn't. Okay, a bit harsh, but you hear it from the Chofetz Chaim, you take it. So Rav Shlomo Zalman gave a whole different understanding of Makas Bechoras and how that works. Okay, maybe that's another alternative reason, but it certainly throws it into a different light. So not everybody fasts, but who should fast? The firstborn of the father, it seems, yes. The firstborn of the mother, maybe also. What about women? Now, in your experience, do many women firstborns fast? None. Never heard of it? Okay, so let's have a look. Look what the Beis Yosef says. Number 22. Kasvu b'tshuva Ashkenazis. I saw in an Ashkenazi tshuva. He said, now he's a real Sephardi. He's born in Spain. I saw in an Ashkenazi tshuva, and it's actually the Maril. The nekeva shehi b'chora kasvu b'seifa aguda tzitzricha leitanot. I saw that Ashkenazi women should be fasting on the fast of the firstborn. V'raya mi batya bat paro. And the proof is from Batya. Batya, the daughter of Paro, and the Darche Moshe, the Ramah explains, number 23, She'amrinon, the Midrash, this is in the Darche Moshe on the Torah of the Ramah, because we see in the Midrash, She'nitzula b'schut Moshe. Batya was a firstborn girl, and she was saved from the plague in the schut of what she did for Moshe. If that's the case, if we're looking at the fast of the firstborn more midrashically, meaning everybody agrees that a firstborn girl does not have the same status in halacha. Peter Rechem, not Peter Rechem, makes no difference. It's only the boys, not the girls. But if you're looking more midrashically, maybe it seems that girls should be fasting as well. But the Ramah comes back and says, I know you saw it in the Tshuva Ashkenazis, but don't get any ideas because the Ashkenazi women don't fast. And he comes and says, now by a real kasa of Deloi, Nagu, and Akevis, Mitanas. None of the women fast. Afal Gav Shegam Behem Haitamaka. Okay, they were included in the plague. They don't fast. Kamoshaloi Nagu Shagod Labais Mitana. The Ramah says, just like the head of the house doesn't fast, the women don't fast as well. And there are any number of later poskim that the Aruch HaShulchan says this, the Mishnah Berurah. We never heard of women fasting on the fast of the firstborn, maybe with one exception, which we'll get to in a minute. So generally, women don't fast, although theoretically, there's no reason why they shouldn't. What is called a firstborn? What happens if there's a firstborn and lo aleinu, there was a miscarriage before that? Now, everybody knows that that exempts them from Pidyon HaBen. If there was an earlier, does it exempt them from Tanis Bechoros? And the answer is, it does not. Mishnah Berurah 24. Haba Acha Nefalim. If someone comes after a miscarriage, Tzarech Lehitanot. They still need to fast. Dehavi Bechol Anachala. Because here we bring in another idea of Bechol, which is in terms of inheritance. He's still a firstborn for the inheritance. A male firstborn gets, in theory, the double portion, although there's more to it in practice than that. Doesn't matter if there was a miscarriage beforehand, they're the surviving firstborn, they have to fast. And then the Mishnah Berurah adds, Aval b'misha noled acha ben tet, someone who was born after a baby that actually survived to birth, afal pi shemei toch lamed, even if, sadly, the baby died very, very young, ein tzarech leitanis, then they're not the firstborn anymore. Meaning a firstborn after a miscarriage is a firstborn. A firstborn after a live birth, even if chas v'shalom the baby died, is not a firstborn and they don't have to fast. What about children? I'm a firstborn, I mentioned before. My son was a firstborn, still is a firstborn, okay? So who fasts? When he was little, do I have to fast for him? Well, I also have to fast for me. So how does that work? Can I fast for both of us? So look at number 25. Nishal Lamar Rush. So the Darach Yemoshe says the following, Shaila was asked. Al Echad Shehaya Bechor. Some fellow was a firstborn. Ubenoi Bechor. And their son was a firstborn. Im ishtoi tzricha lehitanus bishvil haben. Does the mother have to fast? Because the father is fasting for himself. So how can he fast for the firstborn? The Amar, and he says, she'enu tzricha, she doesn't have to, aval ha-minag, but the minag is, she'ha'av o ha'em mitanim bishvil b'neihim ha-ketanim. That the father or the mother fast for their small children. Interesting, huh? People ever heard of that? That if you have a firstborn and the parents are not firstborn, then the father fasts for him. If the father's also a firstborn, you can't do two in one according to this view, and therefore the mother has to fast. Rav Avadi Yosef, actually interesting, the Sfaradim, we'll see in the halacha in a minute, are a little bit more open to women fasting on Tanis Bechoros than the Ashkenazim. He says, you know what, the husband should bring home some food from the Siyum for the wife, and she should eat the food. And that's what I always used to do when my son was a little boy. I'd bring home some biscuits for my wife. Back in the day, I must tell you, the siyum was a real siyum. I mean, it was chometz on Erev Pesach. It was bagels, it was chometz. Now, it's all kosher lePesach. It's a shanda. You know, you go to as a siyum, and they're eating these little shahakol biscuits. You know what? They don't even put kidneys in there these days. Anyway, so I used to always take my wife some food, but I'm not sure everybody does that. Anyway, what about Kohanim Leviim? So I brought you in 26 that Kohanim Leviim, their firstborn, do fast Tanis Bechoros, even though they are Kohanim. However, the Kaf HaChaim says that if you were born as a C-section, you don't fast. It says because you're not a real firstborn, you're not a Petzer Rechem. You see what's going on here? It's the tension between the technical definition, which some poskim want to apply, but other poskim say, really? Technical definitions don't really apply here. It's a minag, and it's got no source in the Gemara, really, and therefore it's more midrashic, etc. And ironically, the technical definitions actually make less people fast than more people fast. Yes. Right. So none of it fits 100%. How strict is the minhag? Let's go over the page and look at this in 5 minutes, and then we'll finish off. How serious? We need to be serious. Obviously, it's brought down in halacha. Look in the source in the Bet Yosef, number 27. V'katuv b'trumat ha'deshen. He brings a trumat ha'deshen, which is an Ashkenazi rishon. She'im chal erev Pesach b'Shabbos. Oh, what happens if erev Pesach falls on Shabbos? This happens every few years. It's happening, I think, in about 2 years from now. I think 2021. Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos. What do you do about the fast of Tanis B'Choyrus? You can't fast on Shabbos. You don't fast on Friday. Okay. It says Mitana B'Choyrus b'Yom Chamishi. They fast on Thursday. Shelifnei HaShabbos. Which, by the way, is very interesting. Because when do we ever bring forward a fast? We always push off the fast. Now, here you can't push it off. When you're going to push it off? To Chag. But you do bring forward one other fast, which is Tanis Esther. And you see here another interesting connection between this fast and maybe the Tanis Esther type fast, because this is a happy fast. This is not a sad fast. There's no Zeichel Churban. It's a fast of tshuva, but it's a dance around the room and get ready for Pesach fast if you can do that. Just like Tanis Esther, there's nothing remotely sad about Tanis Esther. It's a very happy day. All the kids are in costume, etc. So too you bring it forward. V'ken kasav ha-rokeach, he brings this too in the name of the rokeach. V'ken ha-agu b'shem, ha-egu b'shem Maria Mulin. Okay. V'kasav ha-chein avi moiri, but then he says, he writes here, the Rav Yaakov Mulin, that my father would write, the loy hinikein, that was not the minag, ela shaloy litanot kol ikka. Once you can't fast on the real day, you don't bother at all. Hoil v'nitcha, yitcha. Since it's like been put off already, it's been put off already. Ma'acha she'ein o ela minag, it's a minag. And there's no, you don't have to be so machmir with a minag and bring it forward to Thursday. And therefore, depending on where you go, there are different minhagim on that. Most people do bring it back to Thursday. The Beis Yosef brings down a minag that even people who do fast, they snack on Erev Pesach. Which is, when have you ever heard of such a thing? Because it says, Rebbe didn't eat matzah and he didn't eat chometz, but it didn't say he didn't eat anything else. So maybe minei targima, a bit of fruits, a few potatoes, maybe even if you're in the Tanis, then that's okay. It's an instantly kind of tarnas. He rejects that opinion, but the Mishnah Berurah brings it down to halacha for someone who finds it difficult to fast. It says someone who fasts on Erev Pesach and they're not going to be able to do the mitzvahs properly in the evening. It's like the opposite of the istanis. The istanis is someone who eats on Erev Pesach and they won't be able to do the mitzvahs. I can relate to this better. Someone who fasts on Erev Pesach, he's not going to have any kopf to eat matzah and to eat all of that stuff as well. He says they can snack. They don't have to fast fully. There is an idea of eating minitargima on Erev Pesach, even if you are fasting. Bring you another minhag before we talk about the siyum. There was a minhag, apparently, Lukumah 30, the Darche Moshe brings, Kosev HaKolboi, the Yesh Noigim, there's a minhag of the firstborn, Lifdot HaBechorot Be'erev Pesach, to re-redeem the firstborn again on Erev Pesach, Kamoshe Padam Hashem Yisparach B'Mitzrayim, like God redeemed them in Egypt. Meaning, people who were firstborn would pay again, and it's like a kind of kaporos, and they'd give the money to the stocker. So 5 silver coins, the firstborns would redeem themselves, Ki'ilu, and give that money to the stocker. Anyone ever heard of this? Never heard of this. But it sounds like a nice minhag. There is, of course, a question, and I brought you a source in 31, which I'm not getting into now. What happens if you're a firstborn and you discovered actually you were never nifter in the first place? I mean, really, halachically, no one ever made you a pidyon haben. You have to do pidyon atzmo, and that's a halach in Shulchan Aruch, that if you discover as an adult male that you never had a pidyon haben, and they have this in Baal Tshuva families. It's not uncommon where you end up, someone does a pidyon haben and someone else in the family says, oh, the grandfather says, oh, I never had a pidyon haben, and they do a pidyon haben at the same time. There is a story that the Vilna Gaon would go to every time he saw a Kohen who was more meyuchas than the one that they used when he was a baby, he would do a pidyon another time. Because if you think about it, who knows who's a Kohen? Maybe the Kohen they used for your pidyon, I don't want to put ideas into your head, but if you had a pidyon haben back in the day, maybe the Kohen was not really a Kohen. And it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, so maybe you should be choshesh and be poda yourself every time you find a Kohen who's a better Kohen. So they say that the Vilna Gaon stopped when he got to a Rappaport, because the Rappaport's apparently a Kohen miyuchasim, and therefore when he found a Rappaport, he stopped. By the way, I know a Kohen who's a Rappaport, so if you need if you need an introduction, I can help you with that if that's something that bothers you. It doesn't bother me because my mother's a Bas Levi, but I'll suggest it to my son if he feels like re-redeeming himself. Fine. Halacha lemaisa. Halacha lemaisa. The Shulchan Aruch brings down that there is such a thing as Tanis Bechoris. Look in number 32. HaBechoris mit'anim be'erev Pesach. Bein Bechor me'av. Bein Bechor Me'em. It turns out it doesn't matter whether you're a firstborn of a, on the mother's side or the father's side. Ve'yesh mishayomer she'afilu nekeva bechora mitana. And there is an opinion that even women should be fasting. Jumps in the Ramah and says, Ve'ein amina kein. No, no, no. We don't do that. And then he says, if Pesach falls, Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos, you bring it forward to the Thursday. And some people don't do it at all, but the halacha is we bring it forward to the Thursday. And then he basically brings the minag, pick it up on the third line. V'noagim she'ha'av b'chor. That if the minag is that if the father is a b'chor, ha'ein mitana tachat b'naha b'chor k'she'adain katana. They bring this down to halacha in the Ramah. That the mother should fast, like we said, if she has a firstborn child. But again, the Mishnah Berurah says that we don't do that basically at all. Let's look at the last page, because what everybody in this room does who's a firstborn, hands up if you're a firstborn male in the room. Ooh, not many, five or six. Okay, I'll put my hand up as well. What do we do on Erev Pesach? We go to a Siyum. We make sure that we get a Siyum. And the Magen Avraham, in number quoted in the Aruch HaShulchan number 33, says a siyum won't work. How will a siyum work? You're going to make a siyum just to get you out of a fast? Says the Magen Avraham, I'll tell you what will work. A pidyon haben, a bris, that will work. And maybe only for the Baalei Simcha. Maybe it won't even work if you're standing there. So some people say, well, it will work if you are at the bris as well. But to make a siyum, you can't make a siyum. And in fact, the Nodi B'Yehuda in his shul is brought down in the Shalish and Shuvah's Tshuva Mi'ava, who was a student of the Nodi B'Yehuda. He had a sign up in his shul, the Nodi B'Yehuda. Nobody is allowed to make a siyum on Erev Pesach to get out of Tanis Bechoras. Not in my shul. Interesting. If you're lucky enough to have a bris, you can work it out to have the bris in the shul. Rav Chanoch Teller once told me that nothing to do with Pidyon HaBen or Tanis Bechoras, but the Boston Rebbe called him up once and said to him, Mazel Tov, you had a little boy, you'll make the bris in my shul. So he said, well, I mean, we've arrangements to make the bris in a different shul. No, Rav Chanoch, you'll make the bris in my shul, you'll make the bris in my shul. So he wouldn't take no for an answer. So he said, but you'll make the bris. So they made the bris in the shul. When he arrived at the bris, he realized why the Boston Rebbe said you make the bris in the shul. Because it was Yom HaTzma'ut. And the Boston Rebbe wanted a way so that he didn't have to say Tachanun in the shul, but he didn't want to cause all hell to break loose, so he arranged that the bris would be in the shul. If you knew the Boston Rebbe, that story makes a lot of sense. But said the Nodi B'Yehuda, not in my shul. The Aruch HaShulchan turns around and says in number 34, I don't know. Look at number 34. Amnon, Atza, Zer, Kama, Doiris. Many generations now. Shemekilim, Lagamri, Batanis, Bechorim. We're completely lenient. Vahainu, Besiyum, Mesechta. We make a Siyum, Mesechta. Veloy, Levad, Haloimed, not just the one who learnt. Elaha, Bechorim, Mitkapsim, Saviv. This sounds just like what we do. All the Bechorim crowd around and listen. Saviv, Amasayim, or Masayim, Imimo, and they join in with him, even though they didn't learn anything, but they wish him a Mazel Tov. They drink a whiskey. Well, back in the day, they used to drink a whiskey anyway. Ve'oichlim. Ve'nitpashit zeh b'cholam adinas ve'eini, einu yedua, me'ein lahem lahakal kolkach. I just don't know why they're so lenient with Tanis Bechoras. And he says, maybe because people have to do all the mitzvahs, including eating the maror on Seder night. I'm thinking, like, what's the moral? What's it got to do with anything? If you live in Eastern Europe, you're not eating lettuce for moral. You're eating chrein for moral, okay? And therefore, he says, you can't eat chrein on an empty stomach. And it must be that this is why people are makel where they can be with the siyum. And that certainly is the minag. Most people say that you can make a masechta on many different things. Certainly make a siyum on a masechta of Gemara. Make a siyum even on a Seder of Mishnayos. Some people even allow a Masechta of Mishnayos, which is much, much less. Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says if you learn a book of Tanakh and you learn it bi'iyun, then you can also do that. And I brought you references to all the different opinions here as well. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman, it's beautiful. If the Bechorim are sad because they should have been Kohanim, what better consolation is that they don't need to be Kohanim, because a Talmid Chacham Mamzer, even a Mamzer, is higher than a Kohen Gadol Am Haaretz. So that if you're feeling sad that you can't be a Kohen, the best thing to make yourself feel better is, but I can have Keter Torah, and Keter Torah is higher than Keter Kahuna, and Baruch Hashem, you can be happy, even if you're feeling that little bit of twinge, could have been me in the Beis HaMikdash. So either way, please God, if you're a Bechor, you should may find a Siyum, or even better, make a Siyum. If you're in Daf Yomi, it's given to you on a plate. And one way or the other, we'll, please God, have a happy and healthy Tanis Bechoris either way. Next week, as I advertised, mixed marriages. Sfarim and Ashkenazim, and what to do with your in-laws.